The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 265, the TRS-80 prototype. And I am Tom Lawrence.
Mary Tomich.
And Phil Parada.
Tony is not feeling well.
Yeah, something's running through.
Yeah, we've all had our colds.
Get better soon, Tony.
it was, about 41 years ago today?
41 years ago.
The prototype of the TRS-80 was shown to the CEO of Tandy.
February 2nd, 1977 was its inception date.
That's older than you, Phil.
I know. Oh.
And why are we talking about
it? I can't say the same.
Because Tom loved his TRS-80. That's part of why I'm here.
Yeah.
So you weren't one of the people who considered it the trash 80, were you?
I got one of them out of the trash. So yes, I actually did. And very relevant to this, so I am only 42, so it's only a year older. I'm only a year older than the TRS-80, but I did not grow up with money. So I was garbage picking and found people throwing them away, and I repaired TRS-80s because they were very popular. So I didn't get mine till I was like 10 years old, so it had been 85. But I took it apart, fixed circuit boards on it, and I was just highly, highly determined to make it work. And I learned how to code on it. So
that's very cool.
I had to write my own drawing program for it.
I read that it had a QWERTY keyboard. I don't know if that was the first computer with one.
No, it was not the first one with it, but it did allow graphics memory access through peek and poke. So when you wrote all of your programs, it didn't have really good sprite control, at least not that I was able to manipulate, but you had to peek and poke all your addresses in memory to actually make the graphics work. And I saved all my code on cassette tapes. It was
oh, wow, those were the days.
Those were the days.
And actually, even though it was called the Trash 80 by some, TRS actually stood for Tandy Radio Shack.
Yes.
So
it was,
Rest in pieces.
Rest in pieces. You know, it's really hard to get, because of the copyright on the ROM, it's really hard to get a hold of a good emulator for it. So I wanted to emulate my childhood. And see how much of the
there are other ways you can do that, Tom. Yeah.
Hey, I had the basic on there, man. I want to go play with. I believe they use their own like branded version of Microsoft Basic on there as OS. So, and then they had another thing later on called OS 9 that was almost Unix-ish, and it was kind of cool. I never really got good at that. My Linux ventures didn't start till the 90s. So,
mm-hmm. Okay,
yep,
cool. Well, wow. So, I guess quick catch-up time.
Quick catch-up time. What'd you do for the last...
Put a little mustard on that. Hey, I'll tell you what I did. Oh, yeah, I haven't been here for a month. I was sick the last time. We did a little road trip to South Carolina. I also ended up, you've heard me touting KDE Neon on my laptop. Well, I've taken that off, and I'm running with KAOS. Which is a KDE-centric but non-Debian operating system. So I'm just kind of checking it out, seeing how it works. One thing I did notice, I'm a big fan of LibreOffice, but CalibreOffice is the default office suite on this system. So I'm going to go ahead and give that a try, just see how it is. But anyway, so that's one of the things I did. And I think, and then just take a lot of antibiotics. I did that over the last few weeks.
That's everyone did, except for Tony. Yeah. Maybe he's doing that now.
He's doing it right now. that's kind of it for me.
My wife and I closed on our house. We've begun moving in. Finally, it's here. It's happening. If you can't see me, I'm doing the Bill O'Reilly hand movement gif.
Yes.
and you have how many barns on that thing?
Two, and a whole shopping cart full of cats.
Well, they're good for catching the little mice that will run around in your barn.
Yes, they are. I've begun planning home projects, one of them being our own home personal cloud. I'm thinking of calling it either the server farm, or there's no place like 127.0.0.1, or some other name like that. Yes. More to come.
I want to see a barn with that on it.
That would
be funny.
That's what I've been up to. How about you, Tom?
So I'm still running KDE Neon. I have suffered through some of the problems that they had with their release over the last couple of weeks. That just seemed like the device notifier got broke. And that's one thing about running Bleeding Edge code is there's occasional issues with it. Other than that, me and Phil had a lot of fun last weekend doing a Ansible video.
Yes, that was awesome. You can view that on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll throw a link in there. So getting started with Ansible, and it was well-received, and we had a lot of fun doing that. So me and Phil are talking about doing a few more YouTube videos to help some more Linux training and things like that. I'm on the out of getting rid of a cold, so I feel better, but I don't sound great yet.
Yeah.
So other than that, I ended up, our camera died for our studio recording stuff.
And oh, no.
I know. And, of course, that's been the excuse I needed to go buy a brand new...
Did you put it in the garbage and maybe some kid's digging through there right now as, you know, kind of a budding tech?
Could be. I think we fried the circuit board. I mean, we actually want to take it apart. And so we haven't gotten rid of it yet because we have multiple cameras and it's spare parts for the other one. So we bought a new studio camera so I can do more long-form content. So that's been an upgrade to the channel and... one of those, we've been wanting one for a while, and I just didn't have an excuse because the other ones worked.
New technology is the best.
Yeah, and any excuse to buy new technology is always fun. So other than that, what else did we do? Nothing major technical. It's all been setting up new servers for clients and just business stuff, which it has to get done. So there's that. I've been focusing back on a lot of things because the December is a slow month for us, and in January customers jumped in on projects they wanted done. Usually in December they have some server projects, but January has been like big for some of these clients, like this done, put this in. We're like, oh, okay. So but that's what pays the bills, so I have
all that tax cut money they're getting now.
I don't know.
I bet they're probably using that for maybe some upgrades, bonuses for employees.
Bonuses.
Ooh, that would be nice.
Yeah. Hey, my employees got bonuses. We had a good year. So
I think I've heard of that before.
Yeah.
That term, bonus.
Bonus.
Yeah. No, you know, because we do.
Well, good to hear you have a good month.
Yeah. Well, we had because I had to do all my year-end financials, and overall we did pretty good. We took a big hit with the building because we spent a lot remodeling and building this place out. But overall, our outlook is positive, and our goal is to hire some more people this year. So we're setting the groundwork for that. So
cool. All right.
Other than that, not much. I'm trying to think. My YouTube, what controversial stuff.
Controversy.
Yes. So the controversy is, and this directly relates to open source. Apparently, in violation of licensing, the way pfSense is licensed, some of these companies, some of these shady companies, will say are shipping hardware with pfSense on there, and a guy discovered a backdoor on it, and it turned into quite the interesting thing. Of if you buy something pre-configured, now the licensing terms of pfSense are no one but NetGate, the parent company of pfSense, may sell you a piece of hardware pre-installed with pfSense. And when I've recommended hardware, I don't recommend getting anything pre-loaded unless it came from NetGate. Mm-hmm. Well, the admin password was automatically changing on it to a different password, and there's kind of a dig in I did on some of the stuff on there. Then of course, then the people from NetGate got involved, and the forums kind of went to a total crap show.
But anybody go to jail? No.
Yeah, they don't know who did it, and they don't know where it's contacting. Uh-huh. But it became kind of really interesting. Of anytime you get something that's open source based, just because it's open source doesn't necessarily mean someone didn't monkey with it. So make sure you know the source you're buying things from.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm not a big fan of curling a script from the internet and piping it directly into like Bash or Ruby or Python or something like that. You've got to do your due diligence and inspect.
I'm of a mixed on this. So I did one on how to set up a VPN, and my answer is this is an easy automated way where you just curl this auto magical script and it will run everything for you. But don't do this on anything that protects a business. This is your, I want to set it up, and then because it's all open source, this is a way you can get started in reverse engineering to learn it. But if you care a lot about security, or you have a job that requires your knowledge to protect the client, then you really should be doing it by hand and understanding every piece of it, as opposed to letting auto magical scripts. You got to think about any of the sources of that, because wasn't it that just a few months ago we talked about some Python typos that were in Python. If you typed it and it was some scripts, it kind of did not what they're supposed to do.
I vaguely remember something like that, yeah.
Yeah, they were basically, if you typed in, they were actual Python repositories, but they were also based on typos, and they did things that were not supposed to be done. So you have to, yeah. And Python admitted, they said, okay, we're going to audit things a lot better. So don't just blanket trust automagical scripts that get things done for you. So, all right. Yeah, well,
that makes sense. So I guess we'll be moving on to...
As soon as I find a button, we're going to move into distros.
Listener feedback.
Oh, listener feedback. Oh, yep. Mary's got it right. So hold on.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
Feedback. Let's see. What do we got?
We got a message from a viewer named Kevin. I'm not going to say his last name just for out of privacy reasons for him, but he was curious if we've heard of the open source project Concerto. He has a system with a VirtualBox server running 3 Raspberry Pis as the display for it. He says it's been up and running since last July, and he's had no issues. The only downside is there's no pre-made Raspberry Pi image for the actual display units. Sounds interesting. He's also sent some links that we'll include in the show notes.
And that's
Concerto? Concerto?
C-O-N-C-E-R-T-O. And what... I must have missed that. I was sick, yeah. So I may have missed that. What?
It's a digital signage program.
Yeah.
For our business.
Oh, very good.
Because we had actually talked about on that other, the Raspberry Pi, when we talked about the Pi signage and some of the other projects on there.
Now, I wonder if he could use Tony's RPi server to configure those display units automagically.
Yes. Yeah, actually, it could. That's actually an interesting. I think I've had. He messaged me directly via Hangouts. He's someone I know, Kevin. So. Long time listener, great person. Believe he works in the schools industry, kind of like that. But anyways, he showed us this, shared this project with us, and we've actually he's had a few discussions on a few other open source projects. But this one was pretty cool for all the way the signs and displays work.
Okay, great.
And then we also had an email from a guy named Brad. He says,
long time listener.
Thank you, Brad. And he says, in episode 264, we talked about securing a laptop with an encrypted file system and keeping it from booting. And then he goes on to say he likes to put /boot on a thumb drive with a backup copy, of course, and then keep that on a key ring in his backpack. Now, when I travel across country boundaries or state lines, I like to do the same thing, but put it on like an SD card.
State lines?
Yeah. Gotta put my tinfoil hat on.
Going to Indiana.
I think one of my favorite was an interview with Cory Doctorow. He erases his hard drive when he travels internationally, and he just puts a copy of the Bill of Rights on it. Then reloads it when he reaches his destination.
That's funny. Yeah, I could say, I thought about, well, I don't install, except for Twitter, I don't install many media apps at all on my phone. Because, you know, they could just take your phone and go through all your stuff. It's like, wow.
Yeah, there's...
Of course, I'm not a big Facebook user anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think a lot about that. I mean, you just kind of get in the habit.
Intrusions.
Of, you know, anytime I'm not at my computer, it's you hit the lock, you know, Control Alt L or whatever the combination is on your system.
Yes.
You lock things all the time. Phil keeps a privacy shield on his computer so people can't look at an angle.
I can't see a thing.
Yeah. Keeping everything secure is definitely something you should just be in all practice of.
Words well spoken, Tom. So. And I think we also got a email about Pop OS.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, the folks over at System 76.
We'll have a review coming of that?
I think so. I've already downloaded it, and it's very funny because when that came in, as I indicated to the individual who sent it, I had just looked at that. I'd seen an article that mentioned it, and I thought, wow, I was completely unaware of this. So then I had gone to the site and saw it and kind of put that in the in my radar. And so in comes that email. So, yeah, I've already gone ahead and downloaded it. Another one, too, I'm interested in taking a look at is, and we'll get to those in the distros, is Cubes, because, you know, they've got their fourth release candidate. We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
That just came out.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, so Pop! OS, very interesting. I'm curious to see how what they've done with it. No doubt it's really tweaked for their systems. All 76 of them. No,
and for those not familiar, Pop! OS is a custom OS from System 76, mm-hmm. and System 76 is a very open source friendly laptop company. So they build their really nice laptops, and they ship with they used to ship them with Ubuntu, didn't they?
Well, you still can get Ubuntu. You've got more choices now.
My 2017 Oryx Pro came with Ubuntu, and then I reloaded it, as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know, even though we trust System 76. We still like to reload things.
Yes.
and you're pretty happy with it?
Oh, I've loved this laptop since the moment I got it.
Yeah, they're a very good company. Everyone seems to love them. I have a few friends that visited.
Are they very responsive?
Yes.
Or you haven't had to call them because it's so reliable?
No, I actually did. When I first got it, I had buyer's remorse because I should have gotten the graphics card that you could get into.
Oh, okay.
So I was talking to their support, very friendly and helpful, and we got that whole thing taken care of. So from the time that I had to use it, support was great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, another listener to the show, Jay, who's got the Learn Linux TV channel, he's visited actual System 76 and said it was a wonderful experience.
Yes, he's got a video on his YouTube channel.
Yes, it's just about really going cool. there. Yeah. As along with a lot of other Linux tutorials, if you want to learn a lot of, he's got a lot of SSH and tmux tutorials. That's how I learned tmux. Thanks, Jay. I think, what else do we have for listener feedback?
The last one I saw come in was that we got accepted to do our Sunday Morning Linux podcast at PenguaCon 2018.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's that time of year again. Yeah. Conference season.
Yep.
That's right.
Are we going to do Ohio Linux Fest this year? I don't know.
October?
We should probably have all of us here to discuss September. It. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a few months to figure that one out.
It's late September.
Yeah, we didn't go last year for various reasons.
We were doing a Microsoft thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have time this year.
Yeah. Well, Tony, I know we have some listeners on there, but Tony's like, well, they didn't accept my talk, so I didn't feel as determined to be there. Because the Microsoft thing ended the same day the Linux thing started.
That's
so
right,
Tony's like, you know, they didn't accept, he submitted two talks and they accepted neither of them. So he's like, they didn't accept my talks, I guess I'll just fly right over Ohio and land back in Michigan.
Well, there you have it. Okay.
So no big deal. All right, I think that's all for listener feedback.
All right.
All right, let's moving on to
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Distro time.
Distro fever. Literally.
Yes. So like we had mentioned, there's new Cubes out.
Yeah, and I thought they were going to have their version out by now. I mean, the not the release candidate, but the production version. But I do see that this is a, release candidate 4. So I'm anticipating something coming out very soon from them. But it'll be kind of fun. I know, Phil, you and I have talked about, putting that on. I think you use it, as a matter of fact, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I've been using it for a year now.
Yeah.
It's not without its quirks. Mm-hmm. Version 4, I hear, has much better support for video and voice chat.
Okay.
So if you start up a disposable VM, you are able to use video and voice chat, which is a big improvement over version 3.2. Between release candidate 3 and 4, they brought back the Cubes Manager, and that's a nice little GUI window that you can start and stop and create new VMs.
Oh, so, yep. I remember that from, I think, Cubes 2 when I looked at it. It was it was like a little window, and they were all listed, and you could go ahead and spin it up or spin it down or whatever.
The early release candidates of Cubes 4.0 took that away, but they've brought it back, thankfully. It's always been useful to me.
Yeah, it certainly seems like I know when I was using it, it seemed like a very handy tool to have available if you're, you know, moving between environments, virtual environments. So, okay.
There's a new version of OpenSense out. Now, OpenSense is a fork of pfSense, and not without controversy. There's apparently a lot of love lost between the people who forked it and the original founder of pfSense, who has not nice things to say about them and spends time on the internet saying not nice things about them, which is interesting. I've thought about looking at it a little bit, though, because a lot of people have been bugging me about it because it has a lot of nice features that they've been hoping get on the roadmap of pfSense. But the other side of that is when it comes to my firewalls, I like them to be solid, not filled with features. That's, I like the features, but I want a really, really solid performer. And so I'm a little nervous.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, but I may try because it does have something that I wish pfSense had an option to integrate, which is turning your router into a Tor node, where you can just say everything is now behind Tor because you can flip a switch on a router and redirect traffic over a Tor. So mm-hmm. your local network is still your local network, but then on the out, you can choose different Tor nodes on there. And I believe that's a feature that they've added to it, which is really interesting.
That sounds very interesting. The other thing, too, is it looks to me, at least from the information from a few days ago, that they're still working on the patches. Or I think the FreeBSD community is still working on patches for Spectre and Meltdown, although maybe by now.
No, they're... They still don't have them.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
So that's actually, it won't segue too far from this, but there was an interesting discussion I heard in some of the open source community of the end of the free BSDs. And they said they just don't have the younger crowd supporting any of it. They haven't had any major new projects. They have, as they kind of joked, the graybeards supporting the projects, but these guys are now aging out, and there's not a younger...
Aging out.
Yeah. So, and they said that they actually see the lack of... They said it's such a solid operating system, but it just doesn't have the fan base, and it doesn't have the user development base. So it's really popular with the projects it's popular for, like for firewalls, and popular for routing, and popular for things like FreeNAS. But that's it. It just doesn't have the fanfare or the developers. I don't know how...
Where did you read this?
Oh, I know. I feel that way. I don't know. So it's something I didn't do any due diligence or research. I listened to the podcasters kind of go on about it for a while, but I think that he made some very valid points, and he seemed more well-read about the topic than me. I don't know. What about you, Phil? Do you see more Linux developers or FreeBSD developers? I mean...
works for the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, so really that's all I see. That's all I've ever used. Now, I do run... FreeBSD so I can run pfSense.
Right.
And that's been solid for me, but have I ever done support for it? No, not really.
Yeah. And
But that's my perspective.
Well, admittedly, the people that are even involved in some of those projects, they're all like in their 50s, 60s, as opposed to, I don't know anybody young involved in any of the BSD projects. The Linux projects, I know more young people. So, and just not to segue too much, but it's something to think about, which is also goes hand in hand with not seeing a lot of distros getting updated all the time that are based on that. And, you know, they've now had a couple iterations of updated kernels for Spectre and Meltdown for Linux.
Yes, they have.
So, and we haven't even got one yet from FreeBSD. They're still working on the first one. Something to think about.
Interesting, yeah.
It is a tricky problem. Those vulnerabilities will be with us for a long time, unfortunately.
Yes, and I have a link to a demo when we get to the news. It's really cool.
Something I saw was... Red Hat 7.5, which means CentOS 7.5 is going to come soon.
And Parrot Security OS. I've done some playing with it, and it's about time I do a review of it. It's a learning curve to really get good at it. And but I want to do a review of it. It's like Kali Linux, but even more complete. And they've added some CAN bus for car hacking options inside of it. So I've also heard that the new, social engineering suites that come in are outstanding. Like, they will really help walk you through hacking a person. There was an article about that. I never really used them before, and apparently they're really good.
You know, one other thing, too, that was recently released is something called Icky Boot.
What is Icky Boot?
9.0. Icky Boot is actually an open source. Icky Boot itself is an open source project that they've produced the CD, DVD, or at least a live version of it that brings a bunch of popular utilities together in on one system. So you can run it live. You're not going to go in there and start doing word processing or video editing and that type of thing, but you're going to be able to run a bunch of a bunch of really excellent system admin tools. Things like, for example, the old standby Parted Magic is on there. There's also RIP Linux, Recovery is Possible Linux. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
DBAN is on there. Yep. Derek's Boot and Nuke. That has been super helpful through the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and then, of course, Clonezilla. Then there's also something called Balder, which I'm not familiar with. FreeDOS Rescue Floppy. The word floppy, man, I haven't seen that in a long time. But anyway, there's quite a few tools here that are useful for system admin and those kinds of things. And the nice thing about it, too, is that you can just fire it up right from a USB or a DVD if you care to put it on there.
Absolutely. If I was a computer technician, I would have this in my back pocket or my bag.
Yeah. No, the Rescue boot distributions or something, we use a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I've used them, too, and they're very very nice. And that's IKKI Boot 9.0.
So. Something we realized as a computer company, with Windows 10, you just reload it. Like, it's just, you boot up off one of these Rescues, back up the files, reload it. That's just like the solution now.
And Tom, just to follow up on that, remember, I think the last time I was here, you attempted to take that Windows, well, it wasn't 10, it was 7.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then transfer to that new one. That ended up not working. I work with somebody from support at the company I got the computer from, and we ended up just building it out. So
yeah, it's just Windows 10 is so goofy, and it just randomly goes, I'm not going to work anymore. And so that's our solution all the time. Just back it up, reload it. You can spend all day trying to fix it, and just, mission impossible. Run Linux.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Any other distros that...
Nothing else caught my eye.
All right.
Time to jump into
tech news and views.
The news.
News.
Yes.
Big news. Libre 6.0 was released.
Yeah.
I really like the LibreOffice suite.
I do too.
It has been getting better and better since the first time I used it. I think that was back in the OpenOffice days.
Oh, yeah. You know, and if you remember far enough back, StarOffice, where it all started.
Yes.
Yes.
Where it all started?
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, that would have been around 2001 or 2.
As a matter of fact, I think in the Windows version, I think the executable is SOffice.
It is.
.exe, I believe. Yep. So, I mean, just as sort of a legacy to the old StarOffice. But I do remember StarOffice.
Yeah, that's where it all started. And all these are projects kind of that derived from that initial start. It was amazing because it did so many things that were competitor to Microsoft. So
yeah, and I think with this release, I had experimented with it before. I think in 5.4, there's a way to kind of mimic the Word, Microsoft Word ribbon at the top, but you've got to go in and you've got to enable some experimental Java feature or something, which are just by itself sounds scary. And then you've got to turn on, you go into, I think it's the view menu, and turn on a different toolbar, and then you end up with that ribbon. The problem in 5.4 is that it wasn't, it was experimental, so there were some icons that weren't there. It just looked kind of dodgy, so I ended up going right back to the traditional look. And now with 6.0, they've done some more work on it, and I did test it out this past week, and it's gotten better. I'm kind of used to using LibreOffice with the traditional little menu icon bars at the top, and the legacy ones.
I know what you mean. Whenever the UI changes, I'm always a naysayer because UI change is bad.
Yeah, if you're used to doing it one way. And they added another set of icons. I've never been a fan of the Tango icons, which I think are LibreOffice's by default. I don't care for them because they're too clunky and cartoonish.
I changed them as well.
Okay. And what I ended up doing, and don't tase me, bro, but I ended up, there's a set of icons called Word 2013, which are very flat looking, nice looking, and you can download those. I don't have the link in front of me because I wasn't thinking I'd talk about this.
We'll put them in the show notes.
Yeah, and you just essentially just drop it into the spot on your system where LibreOffice looks for the icons, and then just log or close it, open it back up again, and change it, and it looks really nice. So
Very cool.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, LibreOffice is 6.0 is out. The other thing I noticed too is there was an article I saw. I think it was in Ars Technica. They talked about cryptocurrency botnets are rendering some companies unable to operate. And you know, and speaking of that, I switched from Chrome as my default browser to Firefox last week. It just seemed to me that Chrome was becoming such a resource hog, and it may be due to some of the security features that they put in place as far as isolating processes and that type of thing. But if you go in and you take a look at how many different Chrome processes are running, it just got to be unmanageable for me to the point where I just said, you know, I'm going to give Firefox a try.
Now, are you a browser user that likes to open many, many, many tabs in Chrome? Because if so...
Yes.
Okay, that could be why. It is very easy to exhaust your system's resources with that because every Chrome tab that you open is a separate isolated process.
Right.
I could tell that.
Because they sandbox everything. It is amazing to see computers like you need a minimum of 4 gigs of RAM just to open your browser.
So Phil, are you saying that if I exercise more or better browser housekeeping skills, I could go back to Chrome?
I believe it has come to that. Okay. Or we could all get 1 terabyte memory sticks so we can open as many browser tabs as we like.
Yes.
Yeah, no, you're right. There are times where I have over 10 open. And my system at home has, I have 16 gigs of RAM. And so I'm using that. I'm also using a trading platform that itself uses 4. So,
yeah.
Okay. It's
time to upgrade.
Anyway, but we did get off topic a little bit. But going back to the whole cryptocurrency botnets thing, I did, in my switch to Firefox, I did add a little add-on that prevents your browser from being used as a cryptocurrency miner. Because, you know, there are some sites, and that's what this article is about, is some of these botnets will turn your system, you know, if you go to a site, they'll just start it up and use your system as a miner or, you know, while you're there. So some, and it's become pretty significant for some companies.
Yeah, it's a resource hog. Mm-hmm. So, and YouTube got caught up in it. They had some issues where their ads were serving up a crypto miner, and that violates their terms. They shut it all down. But yeah,
And that was one of the reasons why I switched. I saw that my CPU is just so used by Chrome. I just thought, I don't know exactly what's going on here. Well, now I know it's too many tabs, but I thought.
That's an issue.
I'm getting out of here. So anyway, but Firefox so far has been quite pleasant to use. Maybe it's not as secure because I'm not as isolated process-wise, but anyway, I don't know. So
I found an article about a Cisco ASA vulnerability, remote code execution in the VPN module. It has a CVSS score of 10 out of 10 for bad things to happen in the places you don't want them to happen. A firewall remote code execution vulnerability is the worst. Apparently, an attacker can exploit a vulnerability by sending multiple crafted XML packets to the web VPN interface. And this can allow the attacker to execute arbitrary code and obtain full control of the system. They could also reload it or do whatever they wanted, which is terrifying. And that affects the Cisco 9.9 branch, which I think is the latest for the ASA.
Oh.
So what's the CVE for that? Do you happen to have it?
Don't have it.
I found it.
Right in front of me. Thank you.
Yep. CVE 2018-0101. So this is...
That's the first one. And
that's amazing.
Boy, howdy, is it a doozy.
Yeah. So, yep. That's bad. Yeah, it is, based on recent publish, I'll make sure it's in the show notes there. Patch. All right.
And the last story I wanted to share in this segment is LG Bootloop lawsuit settlement, $425 in cash or $700 rebate. And my LG phone is one of those phones listed. So I thought that was kind of interesting. They've been, according to the article, and this was from Extreme Tech, LG has been fighting a losing battle with Samsung in the mobile space over the last few years. And so part of their problem, as the article indicates, might be the long-term reliability of its phones. Although I personally have not really had a problem with my phone. It's been a pretty reliable phone ever since I got it.
Yeah, one of my staff had the boot loop problem, and actually Tony did too. But Tony, by the way, also dunked it in water twice. He went swimming with his phone, so we don't know if that's really why.
Hey, speaking of that, that's also the phone that hit the water in Iceland when I was in Iceland.
Yeah, that's right. You had it.
So it's been in water three times.
It's been around the globe and in the water twice.
Yeah, with this one, it's never hit the water, and I pay $5 a month insurance.
Yeah, I pay for the insurance as well, so these are...
so I can walk away from my phone and get a new one. But anyway, yeah, so that'll be kind of interesting. I've not been contacted or anything by it, but probably because I've had no problems with my phone. So, yeah, so those are the articles for the news segment that I've got.
So let's talk about hacking tractors. So this is actually a topic
that
came up.
All right, let's
do it. This is a topic we had about a year and a half ago, and I couldn't find the show episode number where we had a discussion on this, but John Deere is really hard on the farmers about their tractors. Like, if a belt comes off your John Deere, you can put the belt back on, but until you reset the firmware on the tractor won't go. And the farmers are upset because, like they said, one guy was on vacation, and he said, he'll be back in about a month. And they're like, so my tractor's broke for a month that I paid $300,000 for?
Oh my goodness.
John, there's a group of hackers.
Did they say, yep?
Yeah, that's actually, John Deere actually sent out, and I'll link to the video. They did an inside, and he interviewed some of the politicians that are now setting in precedence that you have to let these farmers reset their tractors and access the firmware in them and be able to update them without exclusive lockdowns by John Deere. So it's really interesting because they really say the lawmakers said, all right, we've seen lobbyists, but they sent lobbyists who flew out to argue even in small towns pro John Deere, like, oh, no, we need to keep all this proprietary lockdown. No one can fix it. But it's kind of a challenge because, I mean, it doesn't make business sense for them to have a whole fleet of people at the ready to fix them. And these farmers are like, look, we only have like 3 weeks to farm the crop. And if my tractor broke for a month, they think that's acceptable and we don't. So it's a really interesting insight into that.
Well, I can't believe any judge would find that acceptable either.
Right.
I don't find that acceptable in the slightest.
Especially because you're moving to a place that has two barns.
Yeah, I'm going to – if I can't reset my tractor – I am going to, I'll be livid.
Yeah. Good news. I still have, it's a thing I'll inherit, is a 1942 Ferguson tractor. So that's still in the barn. Yeah, that's I actually grew up working on old tractors, and I love the old ones. That's the nice thing. They don't make them like they used to because that one still works.
TRS-80 tractors.
Yeah, TRS-80 tractors.
You just slap one on a tractor at all, Tom?
Yeah, no. Well, it's a 6-volt power system, so it's really hard to power TRS-80. old track. It has a crank on the front still.
That's pretty funny.
Now, there is still hope for our right to repair. The EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, does fight for us.
Yes. And John Deere's statement is, we don't need the government involved. They had like the briefest statement. They don't think laws need to be passed in this. They think that the farmers just need to work better with John Deere. And they're like, you're not working with us.
Well, you know, in the current environment, it's kind of a focus on deregulating and removing laws. I think there might be a little bit more of an uphill battle for farmers.
Right.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Keep us posted, Tom.
Will do. On the farming stuff. Hey, I grew up on a farm.
Related to farming, Linux kernel 4.15, the Fearless Coyote.
There you go.
Recently came out. It's
how is that related to farming?
Coyotes.
Oh,
I guess. Linus stated that after a release cycle that was unusual in so many parenthetical bad ways, this last week was really pleasant, quiet and small, and no last minute panics, just small fixes for various issues. I never got a feeling that I'd need to extend things by yet another week, and 4.15 looks fine to me. So with that comes another round of Spectre and Meltdown patches.
So we keep getting them better. So, yeah. And I think we talked about last time. The first iterations did have some major impact. And as we figure out better ways to do it, there's less impact and less rants from Linus.
Yeah.
Of his unacceptable code update rant. Red Hat acquired CoreOS. Did you see this?
Yes, I did hear about that.
So that's interesting. Isn't that a lot related to some of the Kubernetes stuff, Quid and Core?
I believe it impacts Red Hat's Project Atomic, which runs OpenShift.
Okay, OpenShift. That's what it was. Yeah, I'm always happy when Red Hat acquires something. Like other companies, I get a little nervous. But Red Hat, I'm like, yay, they bought something. They're going to do something good with it. I mean, that's my general feelings from them.
Pretty much mine, too. I think Ansible has done well under their stewardship.
Yeah, they seem to do good things. So happy for Red Hat. Now, this is interesting. 10 new VM escape vulnerabilities discovered in VirtualBox.
I have
10?
10 of 10. Them. 10. That's a lot.
That's 10 vulnerabilities in 10. One application.
And they're all VM escapes, which is exactly what you don't want. If you have a VM, the whole idea is everything stays contained within inside of it, not escaping it. So I have a link on the Tech Republic that breaks down the vulnerabilities. There's patches available, of course. But, that's a lot. Someone really did some hacking there.
Well, I suspect they found one, and then they just kind of tweaked it.
Yeah.
And found, okay, here's another vector in, but it maybe has some relation to the original, but it was sufficiently different to warrant a separate list.
Separate list of them. So nonetheless, mm-hmm. If you're running VirtualBox, patch it. So I think that Kevin said he was running that in a feedback.
I believe so. Please patch.
If you have switch to LibVirt. You may not have had problems, but you will.
And this is all versions, whether it's Linux, Windows, whatever.
Yeah, it's all the versions of VirtualBox. It's a function problem within there.
Okay.
I love this domain name. It is whydoesaptnotusehttps.com.
Amazing. I wonder why that myself, apt? Too.
Yeah, and it's an entire explainer. That's all this website's dedicated to for its namesake, is why apt doesn't use HTTPS. And they have a lot of good, solid reasons in there, and it's because of the way the package signing works that even if someone were to try to poison a package with a man-in-the-middle attack, it wouldn't do there because some people think it's because of privacy, like they want more privacy as HTTPS. I'm like, no, DNS leaks will tell people where you're going. You would be able to stop some type of injection, but the package signing system stops them from modifying the code that comes to you. And then they have a lot of little reasons why they don't use HTTPS. Some is compatibility between older systems and systems that can't get out over SSL. And I think it's also so they can do a lot of proxied caching locally. So, which is easy. Now you don't have to install any man-in-the-middle certs. You can just say, hey, this cache here has a copy of all the repositories. And I imagine for massive amounts of systems, that can be an issue. If you have 200 servers inside your firewall to update, and they're all getting the same package because they're all based on the same distribution, you may as well pull them all to one repository and distribute locally along your LAN.
Absolutely. You would significantly cut down your network usage.
Right.
That's being a good citizen of the net.
Yes, because even Microsoft, that's always been a challenge they've had. If you don't run one of their servers, every computer wants to pull the full update directly from Microsoft if you don't have a server set up in there. And because the way they do use SSL, you can't proxy it easily at all. There's a lot of tricks that have to be done to make it proxy better. So you just waste bandwidth, Microsoft, I mean. And that's why Microsoft, and this was always a joke, they've always had to run Red Hat load balancers, even in the early days, because Microsoft didn't make a product that scaled big enough for their own Windows update. Hmm. Always our joke. Now Microsoft's open source friendly, so they've always had parts of it. They've always had to use it. So now reconstructing an image using the Meltdown vulnerability. This is really cool, and I have a GIF where someone has two separate processes running, and they're supposed to be walled off from each other. But by exploiting specifically the Meltdown, not the Spectre, they're able to hold an image. I think it's of a cat because it's the internet, so you got to do a cat. And they're able to slowly over time reproduce that image, because this is how the timing attacks work in Meltdown. They're not just pull the memory from adjacent VMs and running systems; it pulls it a bit at a time. So they actually demoed that, and it's a really cool demo. It shows how it built the image from the original image, and they made an animation out of it. it's really cool. I have all the links in the show notes to see that. And I linked to the discussion on Reddit where they break down some of the more mechanical details, because the code itself has still not been released for this. So some security researchers, based on the knowledge of Meltdown, have built their code, but none of them have published their code because of the fact that, well, it's not all patched. So that's kind of an issue. And completely related to this, and it made me laugh a lot. So the whole Meltdown vulnerability, did you see Intel's statement on this? Like, hey, don't load those patches. They're causing more than normal reboots. My server normally doesn't reboot unless I tell it to. So what's more than normal? What besides marketing speak for it was rebooting, like how many servers? They couldn't be any more vague of try to downplay the severity of this, but apparently some of the patches actually caused the servers under conditions unknown, because they say under certain conditions there's more than usual reboots. Well, more than any is more than I want on my servers. So if you're lazy and didn't patch, good. Even Dell is offering rollbacks because they pushed out a patch and based on what they received from Intel. And Intel's going, more than usual reboots on these. So now Dell's repatching to roll it back to a previous version. So those of you who are lazy, it paid off. Those of you that were on the cutting edge, well, now you got more work to do.
The nightmare continues on.
The nightmare continues on. And the proof of concept of stealing a cat photo, hopefully that's all they take if someone does exploit this. This was really fun. This was things I wish I knew about Bash. And it's probably things Phil already knows about Bash, but for the rest of us, it's a fun read of why you can do things differently and why it works. And it's fun because why you can do this type of bracket, but get the same results, and some of the history behind some of that, and how, yes, it's right. You did read code differently in one place and another place, but both answers are correct because both of these are ways that you can use the Bash shell. It is valid because it's one of those things that the guy said he's why it sparked debate, and it's just kind of come down to preference because both things are built into Bash of work. So, and I think Phil covered that in his Ansible topic. You can get different answers, and they're both right. I learned that in the earliest days of Linux. Remember, my first lug I went to was probably in 1998, and they were like, you may get different answers from people, but they're both right. So don't say just because he said it this way and he said it this way. There's preferences.
I think that's the Perl motto. Tim Toady, there is more than one way to do it.
Yes.
Or we could go with the Python motto. Sure, there's more than one way to do it, but this is the right way.
This is the right way. So in other wonderful news besides Red Hat doing well, Mozilla invests $1.65 million in supporting open source projects. And there's a list of the projects that get supported.
Wow, hooray. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, so there's so much going on in the open source. I mean, it's just this whole positive ecosystem, I feel. And Microsoft, late to the game, glad they're doing a lot of stuff. But overall, it's still really interesting to see all this going on. There's also someone who did a breakdown of all the most popular GitHubs and all the code pushes to it. Now, Microsoft had made the claim and still was able to pull this off for 2017 of being the most active GitHub. And it's nice because we're actually
seeing... How is active defined?
All the code pushes that are going in there. And I have a link to the article for this where a guy outlines how he pulled all the data from GitHub, how he compiled it, and the methodologies used. That way you can understand it. And we know active doesn't necessarily mean the best, but either way, it's still interesting to see because they actually contributed a lot of code back that was good code that is usable. So that's kind of a summary of 2017. It's definitely need to think about.
Well, you know, and speaking of Microsoft, you know, one thing that they still are continuing to do, and this is something that I pulled out of techrights.org, is that they continue to bully people, Android phone manufacturers, or with, I won't say extortion, but it's, you know, the whole licensing, cross-licensing.
I think extortion's a good word to tell.
Yeah. So the sub-headline in this article says, LG is the latest victim, but let's carry on pretending that Microsoft loves Linux.
Yeah. You know, and that's where...
Which is unfortunate because, you know, Microsoft is not even in the phone business, and I don't even think they have yet to really reveal what code was infringed upon.
Yeah, and that's something. There's still a call for that because they've been threatening people who run Samba that there's some type of violation of code, but they won't. Microsoft still has released. There was a website for a long
time. They could crowdsource. You know what I mean? The Samba folks. I mean, they could crowdsource their legal defense fund if they really wanted to push, you know, to push back on that.
Yeah, and it's an aggravation because we, you know, the people we interviewed were such pro open source people who were luminaries in the open source community. Mm-hmm. You know, I forget his name, but. Either way, a lot of these people at Microsoft are people who came from open source project working there. They're working to change a company, but there's still that other side of the company. Like, stop it, guys.
I just want to mention that stuff is still kind of alive and kicking.
Yeah, no, and we will continue to fight against it. Just because I'm pro things are doing right, I'm still against things are doing wrong. They're a big company. You can't just – I mean, they employ a lot of people, so.
All right.
And that's all I got for the news.
Okay.
Did we have music? I didn't.
No, but we have KDE Corner.
And KDE Corner.
I've got a couple of Linux conventions or open source conventions that are coming up too. So I'll start those first.
We'll just sing those.
We have Scale 16, which is the Southern California Linux exhibition, which is coming up in early March. So it's about a month out now. It's at the Pasadena Convention Center, March 8th through the 11th, 2018. So that's coming. That's a very big, I think it would be kind of fun to go to it, although I'm always afraid of being in Southern California because I think I'll be there when the big one happens. I won't be able to get out. Well, that's just my fear. but anyway, that aside, it sounds like a great convention. You're not going to it, are you, Phil?
I am not. Not this year, at least.
Not this year. Have you gone to it before?
I have not, but I'm definitely interested.
Yeah.
I also would like to go to the LISA-CON one day, the Large Installation System Administration.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I've talked about that one, too. But anyway, so, yeah, and then there's the 16th USENIX conference on file and storage technologies, February 12th through the 15th out in Oakland, California. Not specifically Linux, but
related.
Yeah. Related to it, so yeah, those are the two conventions that I noted this cycle, and then I also have a couple of KDE corners. It's very funny, we talked about VirtualBox just a short while ago, and this particular KDE story indicates that you can now use VirtualBox after you patch it, of course.
Yeah, patch it first
to test KDE Plasma Mobile. They've generated an image of that so that you can go ahead and test it in VirtualBox, so that'd be kind of fun to take a look at.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then also there's something that came up. I've talked about the Plasma Vault, and there is apparently some issue, not with Plasma Vault, but I think with one of the encryption methods that is used. And he essentially what the maintainer did, and that's Ivan Kusic, I believe, or Kusic, his name. Anyway, what he's done is he has, as far as the default encryption that's used, he is not CryFS, but it's CRYFS, CRYFS. Does anybody know how to pronounce that?
I would say CRYFS.
CRYFS, yeah. Cry might be appropriate now, but anyway, yeah. There was a problem with the upgrading apparently, and so what they're doing now is, I guess it worked fine if you were using it from the command line interface, but if you're using the GUI, it was presenting some problems. But it is going to be it's not set right now as the default encryption scheme, so. That's how the Plasma Vault folks are dealing with it. So that's my other KDE corner. And the other thing I'll mention is that Caligra Suite 2.8 was just released. I may be testing it actually right now and not knowing it on my Chaos system.
What is Caligra Suite?
It is KDE's office suite.
Ah.
So... it's not, this is just my opinion. I know a lot of hard work goes into the maintaining and development of it. It's not my preferred suite, and you know what a KDE fangirl I am. I like LibreOffice. So So, gentlemen, that's the KDE Corner.
All right. And didn't you have some? I think that's it. I don't have music, though. That's.
We will add music in post.
That's right.
Yeah. Because I just realized my computer doesn't have the speaker hook up to
play the music.
To play the music.
Yeah, it's going to be a surprise music.
So we'll insert surprise music here. Even we don't know at this moment what it'll be.
But we trust Tom's judgment.
Should.
Don't we?
I hope so.
Yeah. We'll have happy birthday music for the TRS-80.
I was looking up. Yeah. I found out there's a band called TRS-80, but I don't know if there's a copyright on our music, so I don't want to get us in trouble.
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
It seemed only appropriate because I procrastinated and had to insert this after we recorded. So here is the Spin Wires, Procrastinating in the Sun. To do. So I ran outside, got the sun in my eyes, met up with Uncle Chuck, stole an ice cream truck, drove in a pothole, ended up in the hospital. Through quiz with the patients, got on antidepressants, took my dog for a walk, met her on the boardwalk, things got perverse, she took off her shirt. Procrastinating in the sun. Procrastinating in the sun. Another day had come. None of the work was done. The girl had gone. Bank account withdrawn. My tires were flat. Back to payback. Sun, the sun in the sun. Procrastinating in the sun.
So, all right. Well, we have come to the end of the show.
So sad to see us go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This has been episode
265.
That's right. TRS 80.
Prototype
birthday. This is Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
We'll see you next time.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009.
I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.